it's framing, right? It's the same thing. You're just saying a different word, right? And it's surprising how much it helps. Just start small with that and then grow from there. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good, and just try and do something and go from there.
Welcome to KPI Fireside. Our mission is simple: to improve companies and to improve careers through continuous improvement. In every episode, we explore the spark, the moment, the mindset, or the method that ignites real change. Whether you're just starting out or leveling up, you'll find the insights and inspiration to fuel your next improvement. Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. I am your host, Keith Norris. Our guest today is Lorenzo Long, and today we're going to be talking about sustainability as a continuous improvement journey, not just an environmental goal, but a management practice that makes communities stronger, smarter, and more resilient. Lorenzo is the sustainability coordinator for Ogden City in Utah. He graduated from Utah State with a degree in environmental studies and spent several years working at a consulting firm in Texas, and has now made his way back to Utah. The position in Ogden that he holds was created in response to resident requests wanting the city to do more to care for the environment. He's worked on many initiatives, including a fully grant-funded fleet of electric vehicles pilot program, and is currently working on many other projects to help Ogden become more sustainable. Lorenzo, welcome to the podcast. So happy to have you here.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. So one of the segments that we like to start our podcast with is a little section that we call the spark. And, you know, for the career path that you're on, I know that you care a lot about sustainability. I'm wondering if you remember where it was in your journey that you thought, you know what, this is what I want to make my career out of.
Yeah, I think for me, it was, you know, I kind of grew up in a really beautiful area, right? I grew up in Provo in Utah till I was about 11. We had a couple acres of land there and spent my childhood growing gardens and playing outside and getting dirty and digging holes, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I've always loved running and hiking and just the things that, you know, make Utah so great, right? I think that it's impossible to not have that spark when you live in a place like that, you know, where the world is your playground, right? And you want to keep it that way. So I think that for me just was the spark in my childhood. And it just continued on from there. And then, you know, really in college, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but, you know, in college, I really started to think that maybe it could be a potential career path.
What was that in college where you first thought, oh, this is the degree or this is the career that I want to pursue?
Yeah, it was a class. I don't remember the name of the class, but it was essentially the entire grade was a community project. So you basically had to go out and work with a community partner to do something sustainable, right? So my group's project was to try and convince a grocery store up in Logan, Utah, to stop giving out plastic bags, right? Kind of a classic, you know, sustainability thing you hear about, like don't use plastic bags. So we started with that and quickly realized that it was probably not feasible to convince just one store to do that, as it would create kind of an uneven playing field, you know, compared to other stores. At least that's what we heard from the store manager. We instead pivoted to say, okay, well, let's make an even playing field and make it so that maybe nobody can give out plastic bags in Logan, which is kind of controversial. And that did, you know, it did cause some tension there up in the city, but a lot of people really cared about it, you know, partnered with the city council, and there was kind of this big movement, you know, amongst residents. And we ultimately ended up passing a plastic bag ban. It took a lot longer than that one semester. So we continued to work on the project even after the semester was over. But what that made me realize was that one of the best places you can make an impact in sustainability is on the local level, right? And so I said, I wonder if there's a way that I can get into this as a career where I'm making impacts in sustainability for local government. Took me a few years to get there, but that's where I am today, and I'm excited to be doing what I'm doing.
That's interesting. So you found that the policy level was where you could have the most leverage on the sustainability. I'm curious if you talked about some of the
I guess you might say like business decisions that were involved in deciding to ban plastic bags in the cell. You said something about one store if they did it. Drill into that a little bit more. What talk us through like the, you know, the logic there, connecting the dots.
Yeah. So I think this is, and this is what's so important about going out and talking to people about an issue, right? Is you might think of it in one way and someone else will think about it in a completely different way, but you're talking about the same issue, right? So when we went to talk to this store owner, they were worried that if they didn't have, if they stopped giving out plastic bags for free or at all, like any all the other stores, that people would simply stop shopping there, right? They would just go to where they could get their bags. So they said, why would I do that and create a potential disadvantage to my business when I could just continue to do what everyone else is doing there? So there was a fear that they would lose out on a customer that would feel like they're not receiving that level of service that the other stores were giving them.
I'm curious with sustainability, because you know, you talk about like the business angle. And I know that a lot of times people in business and people with sustainability programs almost get painted into a conflict, you know, like, oh, the business people, they're all about the dollars and the sustainability, you know, want to save the planet or whatever. But I guess what have you learned about how to encourage people to think about this sustainability?
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. Oftentimes they're seen as kind of incompatible. You know, it's oftentimes people are thinking of sustainability in terms of it's just taking away resources, right? It's requiring us to spend extra capital. It's extra budget items. It's more effort. It's this and that and the other. But when you really dive into it, when you pursue sustainability in a holistic and intelligent way, it is a benefit to, in my case, the city, right? But also for businesses as well, businesses and organizations. If you think about what your real goals and needs are as a business, I guarantee you there are things that you can do in the sustainability realm that will improve your business and not just be a draw down on it, right? And I think it's really important that you can identify what those things are and how you can get there.
The plastic bag topic is one that's interesting. And when we talk about continuous improvement, one of the tools is, let's say, like a root cause analysis. And I think you touched on the idea of not just looking at the first factor, you know, like how do you actually get down to the point of leverage on some of these issues? How has, like, I mean, plastic bags, I know in some places, like you go and you can't even buy them. In some places it's like, you know, now they're selling bigger plastic bags. And I've heard all kinds of different things on that topic. I'm curious how the thinking has evolved on that particular topic.
Yeah, it's funny because there's certain issues that become kind of like hot button, you know, and really the discourse around them is larger than it probably needs to be, right? But as a college student, it seemed like this big deal to me, right? Like we need to stop using plastic bags. And it is important, right? But it's a really small thing in the realm of sustainability, right? It's really not that important. If you're talking about like on a list of priority items, where would you put that? It'd be pretty low down, right? There's a lot of things that are, you know, thicker plastics or things that are more used or whatever that may be, at least in plastics realm. But then there's other things like energy and emissions that are a lot more important to tackle, right? And so I think sometimes sustainability can get categorized. And in this case, it was me bringing it up, right? Because I was a college student doing a project, but like you can get categorized in like, oh, sustainability is just those people who want to take away my plastic straws and take away my plastic bags. And they want to, you know, make everybody, you know, drive an electric vehicle, but I don't want to. And, you know, this, that, and the other. But really, when you're talking about sustainability, We all agree on the root goals of sustainability, right? There is no disagreement. Nobody that I've ever talked to has ever said, I don't want clean air. I don't want to have water in the future, right? I don't want to have trees. I don't want to have safe streets. No one says that, right? We all agree that these things that are really good for our society, but then we get so hung up on the how, right? It's the how do we get there that we really get hung up on. And that's where the halt in progress is, right? So we tend to latch on to certain things. And then, like I said, they become these hot button issues where we're clashing heads, but we all want the same stuff. And so we got to figure out how do we get past the discourse that divides us and how do we move forward towards what we all actually do agree on.
Yeah, that's so good. I think if you have a long enough term perspective, then exactly right. Like, you know, yeah, we all want clean water. We all want clean air. It's just a matter of how much are we willing to invest and spend and sacrifice, you might say, to get there. So in your role at Ogden City, how does Ogden City think about, talk about sustainability? What does sustainability mean for Ogden?
Yeah, it's a good question because that can be different for everybody, right? We're not Salt Lake City, right? We're not Park City. Those cities are very different from us and they do things differently. For me personally, the way that I define sustainability is living in such a way that we don't compromise the ability of future generations to live as comfortably as we do, right? We live very privileged and comfortable lives. And I would venture to guess that most people would like others to have that kind of a comfortable life, especially those people that have kids and grandkids, right? We all want them to live high quality lives where all their needs are met. And that to me is sustainability, right? So we're talking about, you know, clean air and clean water. You want your kids to have that. You want your grandkids to have that, right? So what do we need to do as businesses, as cities, as countries, as a society to provide that, right? Sure, if you don't care, you don't care, right? But I think most people do. So how do we live now and what decisions do we need to make now to not compromise that for everybody else in the future?
So it sounds like you're definitely involved in creating the vision for sustainability for Ogden. I'm curious from a perspective of like things that you have to do on a daily basis, like what does a day in the life look like of a sustainability coordinator? Do you have something like an annual plan or a long-term plan that you were involved in crafting? Tell us about like that long-term plan for sustainability in Ogden.
Yeah, it's another good question. So Ogden at this point doesn't have a specific sustainability plan, like a dedicated sustainability plan. And I wish we did, right? I wish we did. And that's something that I'm pushing for. But I think there's reasons for that. One being, in a city, as you may know, you have a lot of plans, right? There's a lot of plans for a lot of things and with varying horizons and you know, goals and objectives. Sustainability is kind of baked in to all of those different plans. So while I do think it would be helpful to have a sustainability plan, and I'm sure we will someday, these past couple of years since the job was created in 2023, they've actually been updating what's called the general plan. And the general plan is essentially a long-term document that outlines how you'd like the city to grow and develop over the next, you know, 20 years or so. And then also concurrently with that general plan redevelopment, the city is updating its zoning code, which is a little more specific, but again, it kind of outlines what you can and can't do in terms of development in the city. And that's a huge piece of sustainability, right? How do we develop and grow in our cities and our towns, right? I've been involved with those plan developments, and we've been kind of making sure that sustainability in not necessarily like an explicit, direct way, but making sure that sustainability is incorporated into the chapters of those plans, right? To make sure that when we are saying, here's how we want to grow, that is taking sustainability into account, right? Taking into account how we use our resources, how we're building, what materials are we using, you know, what kind of infrastructure are we putting in? Do we want to become more walkable, right? Do we want to make every street a super highway that has 20 lanes, right? I don't think so, but it's, you know, it's a choice we can make, right? We control what happens in our city. And so it's really important that we think about it in a holistic way. So while we don't have a sustainability plan, yeah, those concepts are definitely infused into many plans that we have at the city.
With, you know, sustainability is definitely, it's one of the, with the work that I do, it that we do in KPI Fire, there's what I would call 7 strategic areas that almost every goal in every company, every organization fits into one of these 7. And sustainability or environmental is definitely one of those 7. And I see a lot of goals around energy consumption. I mean, saving energy saves money, so that's a great one. Clean water, carbon dioxide, gas reduction. Those are some things that I see, particularly in like mining industries and like heavy manufacturing. What are some of the KPIs, measurable things that you guys keep an eye on and maybe even set goals around in at Ogden?
Yeah, that's it's really important because I'm of the opinion that you can't improve what you don't measure. And that really goes for sustainability as well. So one of the most important things that you can attempt to measure, and again, if you're a business, this is a little bit easier than it is as a city, but you measure your energy usage, right? Energy usage is on a very, very general level, the most important thing to manage when you're talking about sustainability. If you can get a handle on your energy usage and also your energy production, you will basically do most of the work needed to solve this whole equation, right? And that's extremely generalized. But at Ogden City, we do have a plan that was developed as a part of a grant and then in collaboration with a couple of different organizations, but it's called the EnergyWise Ogden Strategic Implementation Plan. And what that did is it measured some initial baselines for energy usage from essentially three different sectors. So our municipal sector, so city building, city operations, our business sector, and then our residential sector. And then from those baselines, we developed goals to hit. Ultimately, there was a five-year horizon on that. So from 2020 to 2025. So we're getting to the end of that right now, and I'll be putting together a report to talk about how we did on these goals. Each sector has a goal. So each year, there's kind of a touch point for how far along you should be in terms of your energy usage and then different incentive programs and things of that nature. So that's a big KPI there is that plan. And are we hitting the metrics in that plan? So there's metrics for like kilowatt hours, for example, decatherms in the case of natural gas usage. There's number of incentives received, or depending on who's giving the metric there, number of incentives provided and different things like that. So that's a big one at the city that we actually have specific numbers for, and I think is a really important thing for us.
Now, different cities are structured in different ways in their relationship to things like power. At Ogden, do you guys own the power company, the water company? Like, which of those utilities are you guys most directly involved with?
Yeah, we are our own water provider, and then we get our power from Rocky Mountain Power, which is part of PacifiCorp, and then our natural gas from, I believe the new name is... what is the new name? They changed their name a lot. It used to be called Dominion.
Yeah. I'm
trying to remember what it is now. Anyways, we can cut that if we want. But yeah, yeah, Rocky Mountain Power is our power
new name.
Provider.
Feel free to put it in the comments.
Yeah. If you know. Yeah, it's been like three or four names in the past like 10 years. So who knows now? But anyways, yeah, so we have some control there with our water. We get our power from Rocky Mountain Power and our gas from Dominion Energy. And then our water, we're our own water provider. So we do have some control there. But with electricity and gas, we really have to work with those providers to make any kind of big changes or improvements.
You know, one thing that I always find interesting at KPI Fire, when we work with companies, there's certain opportunities that you can see in, let's just say, running a business or running a house. Like, I get my gas bill or my electric bill, and it just is what it is, right? And due to the nature of confidentiality, unless you're like talking to your neighbors about what their bill are, you don't know. But at the city level or at the utility provider level, you know, you can see these variations. Like, hey, here's all these houses, and then boom, here's this one up here. I think that's one thing that's kind of interesting. We have a lot of folks with KPI Fire who have multiple sites or multiple plants, and it actually makes it relatively much easier than if you only had visibility into one, to see those opportunities for savings. I'm curious, how do you guys go about setting targets or setting goals? Maybe you're willing to share what some of those are around some of the energy reduction.
Yeah, that's really important and something that we're actively working on at the city. So we have a lot of facilities, like you were just mentioning, like a lot of companies, we've got buildings all across the city, right? And unfortunately, right now for Ogden City, those are not all bundled under one account, right? Under one master business account, which to me is kind of funny. I think it should be, but that's what we're working towards, right? So this is something that I identified as an issue, right? That we have all these utility accounts and a lot of different people are paying these different bills. And I'm not so sure we know or have a really good, you know, feel for how much we're paying overall for our utilities, right? At least maybe not one single person knows the whole picture. And so we're fixing that. We're doing an audit right now internally to get all of our utility account numbers, who pays them, you know, where that facility is, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we're going to put it all under one, in one spot. And then hopefully the goal would be to kind of centralize our utility billing. And what that's going to do, as you mentioned, is going to allow us to not let things slip through the cracks. So when you're outsourcing that, the payment of those bills to, you know, 10, 15, 20 different employees, something's going to get missed, right? Someone's going to be out on vacation. The payment deadline's going to pass. You're going to get a late fee. You know, the building's going to have a, you know, a leak and they're not going to notice or whatever that may be, right? Because not there's not a single person that feels like it's their responsibility to be monitoring that, right? So we're getting all that into one spot, and that should allow us to have a better idea of the month-to-month cost, any fluctuations, different things like that to save a lot of money, honestly. Save a lot of money both through employee hours used to pay those bills and then also from actual issues at the facilities themselves. A lot of these city buildings are old. You know, they've got air leaks or, you know, maybe there's a little gas leak or something like that. And those things can often go unnoticed for a while. We're working on fixing that. And I think that's really, really important.
It sounds like there's a lot of potential projects, you know, initiatives that could be done. Maybe you could give us a little insight. Like if you look at your idea funnel, your project hopper of things that you're thinking about doing, or maybe things that you've been able to initiate, what are some of those? And talk to us about some of the criteria that you might use to evaluate things to say, this project is something we should move forward with. This project is something that has to wait. What are some of the criteria?
Yeah, that's a city. It can vary widely, but I would say there's a couple different things, and it kind of depends, like I said, on what the initiative is that you're thinking about doing. For Ogden City, for example, we're really, really try to be conscious of how we're spending tax dollars, and you don't want to just be going and spending tax dollars on any random thing, right? So cost is one, right? That's a really important metric. What's it going to cost us? On the flip side of that, how much money could it save us? Right. So if we spend this money, I always say this, sometimes you got to spend money to save money. Right. Sometimes a software subscription can pay for itself, you know, through whatever that function is that software provides. So cost is big. Another thing would be grants. Right. So for cities, a lot of what we do is grant funded, or we hope that it's grant funded. Right. So we're doing a lot of grant applications. So is there a grant for this project? Another thing would be political will. Is this something that can get signed off on by those who are going to make the decisions, right? They are accountable to the residents. So is this something that there's political will to do? So going back to that plastic bag example, there was a mixed bag of political will there, right? Ultimately, it got through, but that could have just been quashed by a city council vote, right? So you have to think about that when you're working for a city as well. And then you got to think about too, just is it a good fit for, is it going to help our residents? Is this going to be something that improves their lives? You know, is this going to reduce costs for them or make life more comfortable? Or, you know, what's that benefit there? So just thinking about that holistically, that's kind of how I decide what's worth, you know, really pursuing on a more deep level is cost, potential grants, political will, and, you know, whether or not it will benefit Ogden residents.
Yeah, I know when I talk to a lot of folks, I mean, a big part of what we do every day outside of the podcast is help people manage these improvement projects. And the idea of calculating the savings is something that's near and dear to our heart. I'm imagining that for you, just like a lot of other folks, the closer you can connect something to hard dollars, like dollars saved, if you can save dollars just by making a change that doesn't cost anything, that's probably a, you know, let's do it. Are there some projects that you've either pitched or been able to get through where there was some really good hard savings dollars that you could think of that you're proud of?
Yeah, as far as dollars saved, this one that I just mentioned about kind of centralizing our utility billing, that's going to be a big one. I think we're going to see serious dollars saved and potentially no dollars spent there. I try to do things in-house when I can, right? Oftentimes you need something to help along with that. But for something like that, that's a clear win there. Another one that we are working on and is, okay, so when you're talking about energy savings, biggest bang for your buck that you can do, and if there's any business owners listening to this, it's swapping out your lights for LEDs. You will not get a better bang for your buck change. So if you don't have LEDs across your facility, put in LEDs and monitor the savings. You will see massive dollars and cents savings. A lot of facilities already have that, but for cities, there's a lot of outstanding bulbs that are, still existing bulbs. They are not outstanding. They're actually not good at all, but yeah, that we can replace with LEDs. So switching things out to LEDs whenever we can, that's massive cost savings for us and no drop off in quality for residents or users of the facilities. And then what you can do, if you're really thinking smart about these things, is you kind of pair a low cost but high savings activity, like replacing LEDs or replacing light bulbs for LEDs, with a higher cost, lower payback or longer payback project, such as solar. Expensive overall, but you pay that off over many years. So LEDs, that's low cost, quick payback. Pair that with a high cost, longer payback, and it kind of balances out to a pretty even payback period all around. So we have been thinking about it in that way. We couldn't quite get the funding to finalize the solar on a new facility that we're working on. There's a big parking structure going in downtown in Ogden, and we did build it solar ready so that it can just have the panels put on when we get that funding. So that's a big win. But yeah, so it's really important to kind of think about your savings and balancing those high cost and low cost projects and then pairing them together. So that's something that we've been doing. And then, man, there's just so many different things. My job is a wide umbrella, right? There's a lot of things that I do as the sole sustainability staff member for the city, and every day is different. I think one other thing I would mention, just as like as a demonstration of just the interesting things that we do. We had a team of 18 people last night start working at 5 p.m. and we went out and I had divided the city into 9 different sectors, and we have about, I think it's 100 streetlights in Ogden. And we went out and evaluated the working condition of every single streetlight in Ogden City, because we've heard from residents that it's not great, right? There's a lot of lights that aren't working. And so we said, okay, we're going to go out and figure this out. So we went out last night and we checked every single light, and it took about 4 hours per pair. So, you know, multiply that by 9 pairs of people. I mean, there was a lot of manpower put into that. But I think we're going to see savings from that, right? Because then you go and you say, okay, all these lights, you know, however many that ends up being, I got to check the data, are not working, right? And the way that billing works for streetlights, you pay for it regardless. Most streetlights are not metered. So you pay a set rate, whether it's working or not. So if you can tell them that it's not working, then you can then get maybe back pay for that or get the light fixed and actually get the service you're paying for. So again, cost savings, one night of effort, that's big payoff.
That's so interesting. It seems to me like the more somebody can clearly communicate with confidence, like, hey, I'm going to trade $100 now for $150 in a month. Some people would do that if they had the $100 now to trade. So I think the more clearly, I mean, most of the business improvement projects that we see, that we come across in the idea funnels. This episode is brought to you by KPI Fire, the all-in-one platform for continuous improvement. With KPI Fire, you can align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people. So whether you're leading a team or driving enterprise-wide change, KPI Fire helps you deliver real results. Learn more at www.kpifire.com. KPI Fire, all of them have the seeds in some brilliant idea. And the only reason why projects don't necessarily get through, sometimes it's because somebody wasn't able to pitch the project in a way that made it compelling enough, or they weren't able to connect it with not only a sustainability benefit, but also a financial benefit, or not only a sustainability and a financial benefit, but also a primary stakeholder benefit. So the more reasons that you can give for something to get through, the better it is. And I think it's great to see that, you know, there's good work to move these things forward.
Yeah, I think it. We kind of talked about it earlier, but you're right. So it's a lot of it is framing. Framing is like 80% of my job. It's how do we talk about these issues without it really, you know, getting, like I said, becoming a culture war or a political talking point, right? As I said before, it really is true. And I'm not making this up. You know, we all want the same things, right? We all do. And so there really is no debate, right, about the core concepts of sustainability. I'll let you in on a little secret. I almost never say the word sustainability when I'm working. It's not helpful. In fact, it's the opposite. It actually makes my job harder. So I say words like resilience instead. It's framing, right? Just, it's the same thing. You're just saying a different word, right? And it's surprising how much it helps. In this podcast, I'm talking a lot about sustainability, you know, but if I'm actually working, you know, I'm saying things like, yeah, like resilience or you know, things of that nature. So, I would say that's really important. And that's a big part of getting that buy-in is figuring out how do you explain it in a way that they would understand, right? Whoever you're trying to communicate this to, like, what do they care about? What's important to them? Right. And it's not manipulating them, right? You're not trying to manipulate them. You're trying to make it so that you can have a productive conversation where you're not triggering these emotions that are not helpful for the conversation, right? So you're trying to figure out how can we communicate properly with one another. And you'd hope too that you've developed a relationship with that person before you're asking them for something, right? So if I'm just going up to the mayor and asking him to do something and I have never talked to the mayor before, how's that going to go, right? So it's really important to develop relationships that are not related to just me needing something from them, right? So that when that time comes, we know each other, we're friends, you know, we're acquaintances. And also I know, yeah, what's important to that person and how can we talk about this issue in a way that will help us move forward rather than getting stuck on our differences.
Yeah, I think using the word sustainability to frame this conversation, but I think that's exactly right. I mean, you're in the business of change management, like trying to make things better, which is very much core to our audience and our message with the podcast of, you know, trying to make things better generally. I think that you make a really good point about meeting people where they are and speaking to them in their language. Like, yes, if you're trying to get something done through the finance department, then you got to put it in hard dollars and cents.
Yeah.
Things like that. If you're talking to other departments, I think sustainability is a concept that's not just environmental, but like organizationally, right? Like, how do we make sure that Ogden or whatever, you know, fill in the blank, whatever city you're in, doesn't become a ghost town that people want to come and be here and live here and invest, you know, their energies here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think you put it in an excellent way there. Yeah, we're talking about sustainability. Yes, it's an environmental word, right? But it's also so much more, right? It's do we want to live here in the future? Do we want to have a habitable city where, you know, you feel comfortable, right? Where you feel safe, where you feel like your needs are met, right? Feel like you can, yeah, go walk to the park and have a nice day there, you know? We all want that, and that's all part of sustainability.
So I'm curious, I think you said that you're the only person with your job inside Ogden City. So you don't necessarily have a lot of peers to collaborate and commiserate with about how you're going to get the work done. What sort of resources do you look to either outside the company or building, you know, networks inside the company? Are there resources that you look to for that peer group?
Yeah, definitely. I cannot succeed in my job without collaborating with others. It's just simply not going to happen. So a couple, for example, Weber State University is a really big partner for the city in general and also just for sustainability. I'll just plug them. If everyone just did what Weber State does in the sustainability realm, in the environmental realm, We'd all be sitting pretty good. Yeah, and you know, you may want to try and get one of them on the podcast, but they have figured out a way to essentially self-finance all of their improvements. I mean, they initially seeded their own money and they've essentially developed a revolving loan fund for sustainable initiatives. And they've now saved millions and millions of dollars over the past, I don't know what it is, maybe 10 years or so. And it's just incredible what they've done. So they're a huge resource. They've got a whole sustainability department. So I talk to them all the time. Rocky Mountain Power, we talked about them earlier. They're a big partner. You know, there's other community organizations like Ogden Downtown Alliance or Visit Ogden. And so these organizations, I guess I highlight those because you've got one that's more institutional, like Weber State. It's a university. You've got a massive corporation, you know, Rocky Mountain Power. You've also got these little nonprofits at the city level. And we collaborate with all of them because they all provide different perspectives and different levels of expertise, right? So me being one person, I really value having their expertise on a variety of issues that I have to confront in my job. And I really wouldn't be able to do it without those collaborations.
The Weber State example sounds really interesting. And maybe you could explain a little bit about what they've done and what you know about how they set that program up. What is it that Weber State's doing that is stuff that other organizations might be able to model?
Yeah. So they have done some incredible work. So I think, and I'm kind of going to just look at a little resource right now to just check my numbers, but they have essentially, back in 2009, created essentially their own, what's called a revolving loan fund. And they seeded that with $5 million. Okay? So they seeded themselves $5 million. Then what they did is you spend that money on a project that's going to save you money in energy bills. That's their general model, right? So it's the spend money to save money model. Then they actually monitor the hard dollars and cents savings. So none of these like theoretical calculations, actually what is coming in on your utility bill, or for them, it's their utility bills. And then they say, okay, we spent this much on this project. We have now saved this much because of that project. That money then goes back into that loan fund, even if it's more than what they spent on the project in the first place. So any savings are automatically reinvested into the fund to be used for future projects. So they've essentially grown that fund now to be even larger than the initial $5 million. And but not only have they grown in size, but they are actually spending less than they were before. So their university is a lot bigger now. They've got a lot more buildings. They, you know, all that stuff, but they're using less energy and they're paying for less energy. So they've got solar all over their buildings. They're actually building a geothermal field right now under a parking lot. I mean, they're doing some really cool stuff. And it's a model that is something that I would like to replicate at Ogden City. It's a little bit hard to do, but it is possible because we're seeing it play out at Weber State.
That's super interesting. I love that idea. The thing that is super interesting to me, and I think this kind of hits at the heart of what I say about sustainability, is not just an environmental attribute. You know, you could apply it to a program that can be self-funding. It creates sustainability in the form of jobs and opportunities and innovation and invention for, you know, for the future. And that seems like such a good idea for the right kind of organizations. I guess even you in your role, from what I understand, was your job created as like a grant or like some additional funding that was brought in for the city? Was it something like that?
It actually was not. It was something that residents were repeatedly asking for from the city. They said, you know, who is responsible for you know, working on Ogden's environmental impact? And the city's answer was, well, yeah, we don't have anybody. And they said, well, you should get somebody. That's really important to us as Ogden residents. And so they actually just created a new budget, a line item in the city budget for a new position, which I think is a credit to the city, right? To listen to their residents and actually spend the money on a new position to directly respond to something that residents felt like was really important.
And I think that there's probably a best practice in there for maybe for Ogden City from the thing that Weber State's done. And this is a pattern that I see as well. Sometimes businesses and organizations will make these improvements And in the case of headcount, sometimes they'll cut the headcount, like, oh, we don't need these people anymore. We made this improvement. Let these people go. But, you know, the lean perspective, the continuous improvement, thinking about how important having skilled, valuable resources are for your organization. I love what you described about Weber State, where they, first of all, they put some money up to get this thing going. And I'm sure that they've got costs related to, you know, keeping it ongoing, even if they are getting, I don't know, help from students or something to do some of the projects, I would guess. But you know, I'm sure they have some administrative costs, but they're taking the savings and measuring that. And I'm sure that maybe they're pocketing it. Maybe they're reinvesting all of it. I don't quite know. But they've created a mechanism for allocating those savings dollars so that the work that entity was set up can be repeated. And I think that's a model that, you know, most businesses at a certain scale, maybe not a 7-person business, you know, could have a person dedicated to this sort of thing, but certainly a 1,000-person business could have, you know, some resources dedicated to that. And the discipline of having that, like, I'd almost think of it like a little savings account off to the side, right? That you're things. I liked what you said about, you know, sometimes you got to spend a little bit of money to save a little bit of money. And if you're willing to put a little bit up, you can make some big impact.
Yeah, absolutely true. It's the most important thing there. And their model would fail if not for buy-in from the decision makers, right? So they had to get that buy-in from those who are setting the budgets to agree to say, okay, we think we're going to save money with this. Like, we think this is going to work, but it won't work if you take those savings and reinvest them elsewhere, right? Because then the fund, it just dies over time, right? So you have to reinvest. You have to keep it alive with your savings. You can also kill the fund by making poor choices on which projects you do, right? So I was talking about payback periods. If you put a bunch of solar in, that's going to take a while to get your savings back, right? They're usually 20-ish year payback periods. So you want to make sure you're not tying that up in super long-term stuff. So you got to make sure that you're balancing when you're actually getting your savings. Because like I said, we're talking real world savings, not just calculations, right? So they're actually talking real dollars and cents. So I think for this, you just got to make sure you're really actually monitoring what you're actually saving on your utility bills in this case, and then directly reinvesting those. And that takes discipline on an organizational level to say, we know we could reallocate this, but we are choosing to honor that initial vision and grow this fund for this purpose, because this fund is enabling us to do other things in other realms, because we are spending so much less on our energy now because of what this fund has allowed us to do.
That's great advice. So one thing that's interesting about a city as an organization is you have a lot of people who live there, and most people that live in a city have at least some tie back to that entity. I'm curious if you get buy-in or examples of how you get buy-in from the citizens to assist in or to be participants in these sustainability initiatives.
Yeah. So at the city level, you've got your common and kind of, you know, regular methods that everybody knows about, right? You've got your city council meetings is a big one. It's a public forum. Anybody can come, anybody can give input, right, on anything they want to talk about. You know, Parks and Rec is an accurate show, right? That's what it is, right? Anyone can come in and say whatever they want. Another big thing, at least for Ogden City, is we have a sustainability committee. And that committee, it's made up of citizen volunteers, right? We meet once a month for an hour, and we talk about sustainability issues and projects in the city, right? So we get input from those residents that are particularly interested in sustainability, right? And so they're a little bit more invested and more officially involved in city sustainability issues. But then, of course, it's really important for us as a city to communicate properly, right? Most residents, I would venture, don't know a lot about what's going on with the, you know, really the minutia of like city operations. And that's normal, right? That's not just an Ogden thing. That's just an everywhere thing. Most people are just not aware of everything that's going on. But you have to make sure that you are doing your best to communicate to those residents that are not listening, right? That are not paying attention, so that you're not catching them by surprise, right? Because maybe there is something I care about, right? But if I don't hear about it from the city, then I can't give my input. So for us, that's social media, right? So that like Instagram, Facebook, I'm not sure if the city has an X account, but things like that. And then we've got, this is pretty old school, but the city has just started sending out a newspaper to everyone's door in Ogden. So we will be able to communicate directly to everyone in the city, which I think is pretty cool and a good way to communicate. Maybe not a good use of paper, but you know what? I think it's important that people know about these things. So I think that's a worthwhile use. But yeah, I think it's really important for us to communicate properly to our residents, which we have about 90,000. I don't know if we said that scale or that number earlier in the show, but yeah, we're about 90,000 residents. So not a huge city, but also not a tiny community, right? Yeah. So that communication can be a barrier.
I'll tell you, I live in Farmington. My city sends out a monthly newsletter. I love getting it. I mean, I get a lot of garbage mail. I enjoy getting that particular piece of mail because I do. I feel connected to my city, and I think a lot of people do. And sometimes it's a story about somebody working in the city. Sometimes it's something about some new development. You know, I'd just call it a newsletter or newspaper. As a constituent who doesn't live in Ogden, I say keep the newsletter because I'm much more likely to read that while I'm getting home from work or it's sitting on my counter than an email that I probably get while I'm at work. And I'm like, I don't have time to read that right now. You know, I have a belief sometimes that those paper things, as much as they're like anti-technology, can be viral in that it can be read by more than one person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, I'm a fan of keeping the newsletter. Once a month is probably a good cadence.
That's right. Yep.
Let's see here. Can you think of any examples where somebody from the community brought something to your attention that became a priority for sustainability?
Yeah, actually, fairly recently, it was a citizen, but he works for Weber State. He was pretty concerned with what's called the urban heat island effect. So for those who are unfamiliar, the urban heat island effect is essentially how in built-out environments with a lot of asphalt and concrete, that infrastructure absorbs tons of heat, right? It gets really hot. If you've ever tried to walk barefoot on the street, you know, or on the sidewalk in the middle of summer, it's hot, right? It burns. And if you look at that with thermal cameras, you can see that, right? So your green spaces, you know, your yards and your trees and your parks, the temperature is significantly lower. Then you've got your built environment, your buildings, your streets, your sidewalks that are a lot hotter. So he was concerned about that because there's some areas of the city that have less green space than other areas, right? And so we wanted to get some data about to really see if that was the case for Ogden, right? So we formed a partnership. They were able to get some little thermometers, and we actually identified sites around the city, some on like city streetlights or different areas where we could put these thermometers and measure temperatures throughout the summer. This was summer of 2023. And then we were able to take that data, analyze it, see where the temperatures were hotter, and then compare that with some tree cover databases and different things like that. And we'll now be using that data to inform, as I mentioned earlier, some concepts in our general plan where we talk about tree canopy and shade structures and things of that nature. That was an interest from a resident, and we did a project. Again, small project, right? But could potentially have big impacts because it's going into a core document that defines how we develop as a city. So I think that was a really good example of that.
I heard you say something about like a small test. It's triggering Plan, Do, Check, Act, PDCA framework. Do you guys have any like framework that you use for as an approach to your projects?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that PDCA because that's something that I didn't know existed, but that's pretty much what I do. it's a great way for success at the city level. So like I said earlier, tax dollars, you want to use judiciously, right? So then you think, okay, how can I test something in a way that is small and not super cost intensive, right? So for example, Ogden City has a pretty big fleet of, you know, city vehicles. And I said, one of the things we could do that would really help us in the sustainability realm would be to electrify our fleet, right? That's going to cost a lot of money. You need to, over time, swap out your vehicles, right, with electric alternatives. You also need to put in infrastructure for charging, right? You got to maybe invest in some training for your mechanics so they know how to work on a new type of vehicle, et cetera, and so forth. But you don't have to do it all at once, right? And so what we did, we said, okay, there's a grant here. Let's apply for this grant, see if we can get money for it, and let's just test it on a small thing. Let's not think too much, right? Let's not get caught up in a lot of planning and vision and this, that, and the other, and let's just do something, okay? we're just going to say, okay, let's apply for this grant. If we get it, we're going to buy 3 vehicles. We're going to give them to a couple different departments who need replacement vehicle anyways. We'll swap it out. You know, we'll put in a couple of low cost chargers that don't have ongoing software subscriptions, which in the charging, realm is not always necessary, for fleets at least. So we said, let's just do it. And so we spent $0 minus staff time, of course. And we did it, right? We got the grant. We spent the grant money on 3 vehicles and 3 chargers. And we now have that going. It didn't get caught up in politics. It's working great. The maintenance and the fueling is a lot lower than our gas alternatives. And so we're seeing savings from that, right? We spent $0. We're saving on maintenance. We're saving on fuel. Our employees that are using them really like the vehicles. Started small, right? And I think that's going to continue. I think we're going to start, you know, more heavily considering electric alternatives as fleet replacements because we started small and we just did something without thinking too much about it. You know, it wasn't a high risk. So I think that was a really good example of that. And I think we'll continue to electrify. So.
Great. That's a good example of just, common sense problem solving. And let's shift a little bit to technology. I heard somebody relaying kind of a story about how in the late 1800s, Manhattan, New York City, you know, horses were the transportation of the day. And, you know, Manhattan is a growing city. There was a lot of horse manure on the streets and people were predicting with the growth of the population that pretty soon they were going to be 8 feet deep in horse manure in downtown Manhattan. And then, you know, a few years later, like automobiles come around and, you know, now it's a different problem. You know, we're talking about swimming in 8,000 feet of smog and, you know, a lot of stuff. I'm curious, what technologies are you keeping an eye on? Things that you think are maybe interesting? What are your thoughts on advancements in technology in this field?
Yeah, going off of what we were just talking about, transportation electrification is advancing rapidly. It's reaching the point where it's almost at a tipping point, you know, where it's becoming almost more common than not to see, to make a purchase decision, right, to buy an electric vehicle. And in that, you know, we're starting on what we call light duty vehicles. That's where most of the effort is going. That's where most of the market transition is happening. And that's where you're seeing most of that battery technology improvement. So, you know, even 10 years ago, you didn't have a battery that could go more than 100 miles on a charge, right? And now you've got some that can go 500. And that's massive improvements when we're talking about battery technology. So that's something that really excites me because if we can electrify our transportation, especially here in Utah, that's really going to help our air quality. We have some of the worst air quality in the world. And if every car today, you know, every car, train, whatever, became electric, our air quality would be massively improved. Those inversions wouldn't be so toxic. You know, we'd still get that inversion effect where everything's trapped underneath that layer of clouds, but what's trapped underneath there wouldn't be as toxic, right? So I think that's one thing that really excites me is transportation electrification, and the technology there is improving extremely fast. And then also renewable energy, right? So electricity is not necessarily or inherently clean in the United States right now, right? A lot of it is still produced using natural gas or coal or things of that nature. So yes, electrifying is good, but it'll be even better once the resources used to produce the electricity are clean, right? So when we're talking about that, we're talking about wind and solar, and then geothermal is another big one. And that's one that excites me a lot right now is geothermal. Especially here in Utah. So not everywhere can do geothermal, right? You need to have a certain type of geography to have geothermal. But here in Utah, we're well suited to it. So basically you drill down kind of like an oil rig and it uses the same technology as fracking, but essentially it provides base load power so it basically has water that is heated by the heat from the earth underground, which then spins a turbine and you get power, right? So geothermal is something that really excites me and is starting to be developed here in Utah. And I mentioned baseload power. That means it's not subject to the weather, basically, or the time of day, right? You don't need the wind blowing. You don't need the sun shining. It's always there. You always have that heat underground. It doesn't change. So you can have it as a reliable source of power, just like you will for what you typically think of with your natural gas or things of that nature. So geothermal is really, really exciting, and it doesn't take that much to develop.
Are there companies that you're familiar with in this area that are pursuing that? Is that a
Yeah, look up a company called Fervo, F-E-R-V-O. They're out in Beaver, Utah. They have some real cool stuff. So look up their website or put in the show notes or whatever. Really, really cool what they're doing down there.
Awesome. That's a good recommendation. What do you think of things like nuclear and some of those more, you know, I don't know. I mean, you hear a lot about these, but it seems like I'm hearing more conversations about innovation and innovative companies pursuing some of these, and people are using AI as like both the driver pushing us to need all of those, but also the, you know, like AI can help us figure out some of these things. What do you think the future there is?
Yeah, as far as nuclear goes, I'm a proponent of nuclear. Yes, it's requires a lot of water, but I think just the amount of energy that it provides for what you need to create that energy is just, the opportunity is huge there. So in Utah, we have what's called Operation Gigawatt from our governor, and that is heavily focused on nuclear, getting that developed here in Utah, which is a tall task, right? You've got a lot of fear, right, from nuclear, from a couple of legitimate high-profile collapses of nuclear reactors, right, for various different reasons. And as a society, when that happened, we put up all this red tape around nuclear, when in actuality, it's one of the safest forms of energy in terms of actual, you know, deaths caused by producing nuclear energy or, you know, the equipment that is used to produce that. It's so far skewed in the bad way towards, you know, coal mining and all those types of energy versus nuclear, which is actually very, very, very safe. So we haven't gotten over it yet as a society. I'm sure we will eventually, but if we do, I think that'll be a really important piece of the equation of, you know, in our energy, because it, like I said, it can just, it provides a level of energy compared to the resources required that's really unparalleled, apart from those like solar and wind, in which case it's basically free. So, I mean, in terms of the energy being given to it, right? The wind, yeah, to spin the turbine, or the sun to go to the panel. So,
yeah. So in terms of misperceptions, is there something that you feel like is a misperception about this sustainability or environmental, something that, you know, I don't know, maybe kind of irks you a little bit about the way a lot of people think about this, that you'd like to clear the air on?
Yeah. You know, I think what I would say is we're not all hippies, right? It's not some hippy dippy thing anymore. Maybe it once was, right? But today, you know, in 2025, sustainability is important across the board, right? Like I said before, everybody cares about it. And it's not all about take, right? It's not about ruining people's lives, right? It's about how do we implement programs that enhance the way that we do things, right? How do we provide a way of life that is comfortable for as long as we possibly can, right? It's a shame that, you know, anytime you say the word sustainability or climate change, that it becomes, you know, the walls go up, right? I think it's unnecessary. I think it's not helpful. And I think as much as we can, you know, as a society, to take those walls down and focus on the core issues, I think we'd be the better for it, right? So yeah, sustainability, it's not all about taking away, right? There's actually a lot of opportunity there. As we mentioned with Weber State, I could have talked about that and not mentioned sustainability a single time, right? And there would be a lot of people on board, and they should be, right? And so we could do that without even talking about sustainability, and we'd be racking up the money, the savings, and we'd all be the better for it, right? The energy usage would be down, environmental footprint way smaller, you know, the savings are a lot bigger. So these things, they don't have to be overtly environmental, and we don't have to focus on the environmental benefits all the time for the actual purpose of the project, right? What are the other benefits? What are we working towards as a goal? And then can we frame it that way? You know, I think we'd be able to move forward a lot better on a lot of these things.
Sounds like a good message. Kind of taking you to the other side of the scale, is there an element of this sustainability piece of all of these great things we talked about, clean air, clean water, abundant energy, green spaces. Is there a particular area that you do want to raise a little bit of, like what are we not paying enough attention to that we should in this domain generally?
That's a good question. I gotta think about that. Let me think about that. That's a good question. I think today we are thinking about all the things, right? But it's what are we willing to actually act on that worries me, right? So we know that the problems are there, but it's are we willing to do something about it is what I'm more concerned about, right? But I think what I'm most concerned about too is we always focus on the problem, but not the opportunities, right? If we just focus on the benefits of doing these things rather than the problem itself, I think that would be more effective, right? So concern-wise, yeah, like our energy usage, where we like how we make our energy, we have the technology right now to solve the problem, right? We have it. We're not waiting for some technological revolution. It's here. We have it. We can do it. We're just not doing it, right? There's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of complexity to that, I know. But on a base level, for a lot of issues, we're talking about like, oh, well, someday, you know, like, for example, if we're talking about like medical advancements, like someday maybe we'll cure cancer if some discovery happens. Like that discovery has been made in the terms of, you know, for energy. Like we have wind and solar and geothermal and nuclear and all these things to solve the problem. And we're just not doing it fast enough. So that's a little concerning, right? But if we can talk about those things and if they can reach price parity, which they are pretty close to, and in some cases they are cheaper. Coal, for example, is more expensive than other sources of renewable energy now. Yeah, it's there. So it's market transition. So that's a little concerning to me is when we have the solution, and yet we don't do anything about it. So I'd say that's really what concerns me more than one specific issue. It's the lack of action when we know what the solution is.
You mentioned the idea of getting leverage and it seems to me in your role that you know, certainly you could take certain projects and run with them and you probably do, but it seems like you've got to do a lot of facilitation, you know, kind of getting other people inspired to have an idea and helping shape that. Are there certain areas that you want to call out or people that you maybe would invite to contact you to say, hey, if this is you and this is your situation, feel free to, you know, reach out to Lorenzo or you know, how could they get in touch with you and look for some collaboration in making a difference there?
Yeah, I'd say definitely. I mean, we'll have my contact information in the show notes. I'm always willing to have a chat. I think that's also part of my job, right? It's helping anybody pursue that vision of sustainability, right? And it looks different for everybody. But I'd say my piece of advice would be, we've kind of mentioned this multiple times, but you know, if you're a big company and you got a lot of money, right? You got a lot of revenue, just reinvest a little bit of that in a staff member to really focus on these things, right? I have a hunch that if you empower that staff member, they will pay for themselves in, you know, in the savings that they create for the business. So if you have that revenue, I would say do that, right? If you don't, or if you're just an employee of a company listening to this, try and start a little group, just a little group of interested employees. And we've talked about it, but start small, right? Start just a little issue. Maybe it's something really easy like recycling or something. Just start small with that and then grow from there. I think don't let perfect be the enemy of good and just try and do something and go from there. But I'm happy to help in any way. If you have any questions about how this looks on a city level, you know, after this conversation, yeah, get in touch with me. Happy to chat, happy to give some advice. And see what we can do.
Yeah, that's great. I think the you touch on like that relationship between the city and the university and, you know, Rocky Mountain Power, the utility. Are there other companies? Maybe it's big companies, maybe it's just certain companies with a particular strategy. Are there other companies that you can think of in that you guys are working closely with in Ogden that could be a model for to inspire other people?
Yeah, I would really highlight that Weber State collaboration, you know, both with what they are doing, as we've talked about earlier in the podcast, but just also just, you know, in terms of that collaboration with the city. They are just such a big resource. And there's so many of these resources out there that we may not even know about until we go out and look, right? We could just ignore them entirely. but we'd be losing out on a huge benefit. With Rocky Mountain Power, you know, so you may think, well, isn't their goal just to make as much money on electricity as possible, right? But there's actually a little nuance to that, where they actually like when their customers conserve energy, because it then reduces strain and load on their infrastructure, right? So we're actually pursuing the same goal. They actually would prefer that we use our resources or our energy more efficiently. So those collaborations are out there. And at first glance, you might not think that it would work, right? Rocky Mountain Power in the city, but we actually pursue a lot of the same goals and have a lot of the same desires. So just reaching out to them and getting a point of contact there and developing that relationship can pay major dividends in the future.
Well, that's wonderful. I think that's such great advice, and hopefully that can, you know, is a best practice that can be shared in other cities and universities and other companies as well. Lorenzo, before we go into the outro, is there any questions that you prepared for that I should have asked that I did not?
Let's think. Now, we talked about a lot of really good stuff. I would say one thing I would just like to mention is that progress is slow, right? That's just how it is, right? And we can't be discouraged by things moving slowly. It's really important to celebrate the small things, right? However small, just celebrate that and keep on moving forward, right? Big businesses, big corporations, cities, states, it moves slow. There's a lot of moving parts, but that's just the name of the game. I think it's really important to just remember that and accept that as part of the job. You know, change is slow, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. I could go on for a long time about all the projects we're working on at the city. There's a bunch that I didn't mention that are really cool, but I won't bore us with all those details. It's safe to say, I think just Ogden in general is a really good model of a smaller city taking action on sustainability. A lot of times the cities that have these positions, you know, a sustainability coordinator or a manager or whatever, are bigger than Ogden. And I think Ogden's a good example that shows that you can have this without being a Salt Lake City, you know, for example. You can do this, right? It is possible. And so don't be afraid to do something that the bigger cities usually do, right? It can be a really smart move, and it can really benefit the city. So if you're, you know, a smaller city, a smaller business, don't be afraid of something like this. You know, it might seem like it's maybe a little bit too big for you or your business or your city, but even if you just enlist an existing staff member, just kind of some additional duties, you know, other duties as assigned, if someone's interested, right? Use that as a development opportunity for that person, increase their skill set, and they can provide some benefit to the company or the city in that way. So little bit of a ramble there, but yeah, a couple things. So I think those are important to remember.
That's great, Lorenzo. I appreciate you joining us today on the podcast. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and wisdom about how to position those projects. And I think it's exciting how you've been able to harness something that's this, you know, spark inside of you, this desire to help the environment and sustainability and to make sure that, you know, the planet's a good place to live in the future. And turn it into a job, something that you can, you know, make a living at. So congratulations for that.
Thanks. Yeah. And it's been really fun to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So for our listeners, if you want to connect with Lorenzo, we'll put his contact information in the show notes. You can find him on LinkedIn, I'm guessing, Ogden City, Lorenzo Long. And for our listeners, if you would like to suggest a guest, ask a question, or give us any ideas for episodes or content, you can reach out to me, Keith Norris, on LinkedIn. And this concludes our episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast for today. If you have enjoyed the episode, be sure to add a comment, like, follow, subscribe on the various social channels, and share the podcast with friends or colleagues who are as passionate about continuous improvement as you are. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.